Welcome to the Florida Roundup. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, when Bill Galvano became the leader of the Florida Senate, he made no secret of his top priority, new roads. Back in January, weeks before the start of the legislative session, Galvano called for three roads. He called them corridors.
Look at extending the Suncoast Parkway as a corridor with multi-use to the state of Georgia, to continue the Turnpike connector to the West Coast, and to create a corridor through our rural counties from Polk County south and into Collier County.
Lawmakers and Governor Ron DeSantis agreed, and so the state's biggest road project in 50 years is moving forward. The law says the roads are to, quote, revitalize rural communities, encourage job creation, and provide regional connectivity, end quote. So are these roads needed? We're going to talk about transportation in Florida here today, all hour long on the Florida Roundup. Will these new roads open up more areas of the Sunshine State for development? Will that mean necessarily more traffic? What's your experience getting around your neighborhood in your region? Call in now, 305-995-1800. Your transportation story is at 305-995-1800 at Florida Roundup on Twitter. Your phone calls and tweets coming up in just a few minutes. The Senate President of Florida, Bill Galvano, joins us now via FaceTime. Senate President Galvano, welcome to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So the law refers to corridors. Doesn't it mean roads, though?
No, actually, the law is referred to as MCORs, multi-purpose corridors. It includes roadways, but also includes opportunity for water, sewer, and broadband access. It's a multi-purpose infrastructure proposal that now is underway from a planning standpoint.
So
thanks to the governor signing it.
Yeah, the legislation has been signed into law. A planning standpoint, the legislation creates three task forces to look at these three corridors, which would include roads, the Suncoast Parkway, the Turnpike Connector, and then this new road that would go from around Naples up to I-4 in Polk County, just south of Orlando. In your mind, does this begin to pave the way for the roads as part of these corridors, or could these corridors happen without necessarily new asphalt or concrete being laid?
No, I think it does pave the way, so to speak, for the roadways. The Florida Department of Transportation, now with the funds that have been committed to the trust fund, has the financial capability of moving forward with the planning, development, and engineering. But you mentioned the task force that will look at the feasibility and the design, et cetera. Those are very important aspects, because really what I did was create a committee, the Infrastructure and Security Committee, chaired by former President Tom Lee, and wanted this idea developed organically. And the composition of those task force includes local governments, state agencies, and in particular environmental interest. And we'll have public hearings. And so all of this is going to be planned together. But it has to happen if we're going to be able to sustain the growth that's occurring in Florida, which is essentially 850 people per day.
Yeah, Senator Galvano, you know the critics point out to say there hasn't been a need study for these roads. You talked about the feasibility studies that the task forces will undergo. There's no specific routes that have been identified just yet. So to call for these three new roadways, to know that these task force are going to lead to asphalt and new pavement, isn't it premature?
No, it's not premature. Right now in the state of Florida, we have what I call a perimeter of prosperity all along the coastlines. But the density has become unmanageable. If you go to Wildwood right now, for example, where the Turnpike intersects with I-95, you're just going to stop. You will literally stop and creep along for several miles. We saw a great challenge with the evacuation when Irma was hitting the state. So we have this need. When we started down this path, I, and at my designation even, I challenged the Senate to understand that infrastructure and the future of our state economically and otherwise was dependent upon our infrastructure and our investment therein. And I worked with many different groups prior to even unveiling the MCOR idea, and had feedback from people who had looked at these, including former chairs of or secretaries of the Florida Department of Transportation.
As we move forward with this task force, or the three task forces, you mentioned the funds, over $100 million, I believe, transferred into the Transportation Trust Fund. These dollars have to come from somewhere, in some cases going to come from the general revenue. Is this, how much of this money is going to be pulled out of general revenue that could be otherwise spent on, for instance, education and healthcare, the two big pieces within the state budget?
Well, just by way of footnote, if we were more aggressive with education funding than we have been in a long time.
Yes, that is
also
true. But
which
but
is
I'm looking forward here, and you know what the critics will point to is you can only spend the dollar.
Yes, and I'm going to respond to that. But I did want to point out that that was a priority of mine as well, to have balance in education. The funds that are dedicated initially were meant for transportation infrastructure, collected from fees, and they went during the recession into general revenue. We have rededicated those funds through our budget and through this policy because the necessity of having that dedicated and those dollars in the queue coming forward is evident in the fact that we have been playing with our roadways catch up for so many years and trying to remediate problems and adding a lane here or there. The idea is that we will be able to plan. And if all purposes of the multi-purpose corridor come into fruition, and we are improving water and we septic to sewer and increasing broadband, it will have a reaching effect that will impact even education in other areas. So in order to think forward and not think fix yesterday's problems, but anticipate the future, we need to have these funds in the queue and dedicated.
With that in mind, Senator, do roads address the future, or should you be looking at other alternative transportation mobility issues on these corridors?
Great question. And that's right at the heart of at least what my vision has been. You know, we are moving into a new age of autonomous vehicles, electric vehicles. All of these things need to be part of the dialogue when we create these corridors. And that's why at the end of the day, that's what they are, corridors. And I've been a strong advocate for dedicated lanes for autonomous vehicles, things of that nature. And, you know, you may have electric charging stations that in place of where gas stations would be your traditional interior rest stops. So hopefully this is not hopefully that's a directive in putting this together, that we look to the future of travel as well.
But the future of travel still means rubber wheels on pavement.
Yes, in the foreseeable future, that is correct. As we see technology advance, the Tesla still has tires.
Senator Bill Galvano, the president of the Florida Senate, thanks for joining us today on the Florida Roundup. We appreciate it, sir.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, in April, when lawmakers were considering the bill that starts the process to build these three new roads, the head of the Sierra Club in Florida, Frank Jacalone, issued this warning.
If this bill is passed, we will declare war on all of those who have sponsored it. We will amount the most massive campaign Sierra Club has ever done in Florida in our history to stop those toll roads.
Frank Jacalone joins us now from our station in Tampa, WUSF. Frank, thanks for being with us. So a declaration of war on the legislation that is now enacted to build these three new roads in Florida. You leading the Sierra Club and other environmental groups across the state have vowed to fight these projects. You've dubbed them the Billionaire Boulevard, calling it political payback for major landowners and development interests, and even one of the biggest land grabs in decades. Why is Sierra Club going in so hard to fight these new roads in Florida, Frank?
Let me say to begin with
thank you for having me on the show. But let me say that it was Senator Galvano and those people who put this bill together, who declared war on Florida's environment and on the people who live in these rural communities. These bills, this toll road plan, is a disaster in the making. We are opposed to it because it will bring sprawl to the middle of the state and to our Nature Coast area. It will inevitably lead to the destruction of wildlife habitat, and it will turn communities on existing roads into ghost towns. This is not something that we want as environmentalists, that the people in those local areas want. And in addition, it takes valuable money that could be used for not just healthcare, not only education, but for transit in our existing cities. What is the state of Florida doing to make sure that we have modern transit in places like Tampa and St. Petersburg and Jacksonville, Miami, Fort Lauderdale, Tallahassee, Gainesville, Orlando? We all need modern transit. The state needs to help out instead of building new toll roads.
And if you're just tuning into the Florida Roundup, we're talking for the full hour this Friday about the prospect of three major new toll roads in Florida. Going to your calls after the break. Stay on the line at 305-995-1800. Getting your tweets, too. Here's one for you, Frank, from a listener. Building more roads won't reduce traffic. This is echoing what you just said. We need to invest in alternate forms of public transit to protect the environment and reduce our reliance on cars and gas. Okay, so we heard earlier in the show Senator President Bill Galvano acknowledging that we're moving into a new world of transportation, but centering it around the automobile. He talked about electric cars in particular. Is the Sierra Club's position more that the state should be investing in public transit, light rail, for example, for transportation between the cities, between the state's major cities, rather than cars?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Anybody who tries to travel on the I-4 corridor knows that it's a nightmare. And it's not because of the concentrated growth in places like Tampa and Orlando. It's because of the sprawl that has generated between the two and continues to build. And now you're going to increase that even further with these toll roads. What you need to do is follow the model of a city like St. Petersburg, which is building up. They are renovating that city, bringing more and more people into those cities and providing new services, new transportation, an ability for a renaissance to take place in each of our cities along Florida's coast. Secondly, we need to channel infrastructure funds to those rural communities that Senator Galvano has talked about. Let's bring them the sewage money. Let's bring them the money for Wi-Fi. Let's bring it to those small communities that dot US 27 and US 19, help them to improve their roads without building new toll roads miles to the west or east of the existing transportation corridors that will turn those existing communities into ghost towns, because development will shift to the intersections near eat the new toll roads. That will be the new place to be, and those existing communities are going to suffer as a result.
What about the argument that we heard from the Senate president that there is congestion, that this is a response to the demands that the state's transportation grid is dealing with? And then also a related question for you, Frank. You're saying the Sierra Club and other environmental groups are going to declare total war on this. How do you plan to fight this, given that the governor has signed off on it and the plan, pending final approval, looks to be moving forward, construction slated to start at the end of the year 2022?
So to the first question, as you build new roads, you actually increase congestion and you increase driving times. So that where Senator Galvano is in Bradenton, there's now a movement of development to the east. If you build the toll roads that go parallel to Bradenton, 70 miles out, then there's going to be infill. If that infill takes place all the way to Bradenton, then people are going to be traveling between those areas on all sorts of roads, between the toll roads and I-75, that will cause super congestion in that area. People are going to be commuting back and forth to work between various cities, and all of those roads with the new people that are brought in, the new roads, the additional cars, are going to be congested. That is the history that we've seen in every urban metropolitan area that adds sprawl onto the existing urban city. So the second question is, how do we expect to conduct war? By war, we mean we're going to use all of our resources to fight this. We are going to go to court to fight these new roads and interchanges that are being built. We are going to hire organizers who will not only work with environmentalists, but people in the community who are opposed to these toll roads and who are going to be impacted by it. We are going to increase our lobbying efforts in the legislature to get them to repeal this bill and not to approve the funding necessary to build the roads. And finally, we're going to wage an election campaign so that people who continue to support these toll roads will be targeted for defeat in the next election.
Are these tactics that have worked in other states where the Sierra Club has tried to stop these types of toll road projects in other places around the country?
Yes. So I can recall a few years ago when we fought a major toll road near Salt Lake City in Utah, and we were able to stop it. Florida has had a history of building more and more roads, and once you build the roads, the people come. We have 20 million people now. The people who want to build these toll roads and who are predicting, you know, hey, there's massive growth, you need to build the roads, you need economic development, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy that will lead to doubling Florida's population in 40 years.
You think that's unsustainable. Is that right?
It's not sustainable. We do not have the water. We don't have the land resources. Excuse me. It's going to cause pollution. I mean, the pollution that we're having with red tide and harmful green algae, blue-green algae blooms right now, is partially caused by all of the people that we have brought in that are polluting our natural environment. If you double the population here, you're going to make that problem that much worse.
Florida's built on growth and development. Before we go to break, are you saying it's time to change that economic model of the state?
We now, as people, probably have half the state of population under urban development. It's insane to think that we should be converting all of those ranches in the center of the state, all of that natural land in the Nature Coast portion of Florida north of Tampa, and then even building another corridor to Jacksonville, where you are, Melissa.
We're running up against a break, but yes, you're right. I am in Jacksonville. You're talking to us from Tampa. My co-host is in Miami. So this is truly a statewide conversation. And Frank Jackalone, Florida Chapter Director of the Sierra Club, I want to thank you for being on the program today, along with Senate President Bill Galvano, who also appeared. Frank, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much.
And in a moment, your calls and tweets. What do you think about the prospect of three major new toll roads in Florida? What are your thoughts about driving around the state? Give us a call. We'll be right back. This is the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup, and thanks for being with us this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And in Miami, I'm Tom Hudson. The Suncoast Parkway is one of Florida's toll highways. Today, it runs 57 miles from Tampa North into Hernando County. Now, a new law paves the way for the road to stretch another 150 miles or so up to the Georgia border. Allison Ty lives near where the road currently ends. She moved there 23 years ago when there were just a few homes in her neighborhood, and she's generally okay with the bigger road.
Well, I don't want to be like New York City. But it's a good thing. It's an improvement. It's a progress.
A little further up the road, John Kenzora says he's read the parkway expansion would help during hurricane evacuations.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea since they're going to go all the way to Georgia. I really do. And none of the white people are complaining about it. I really don't.
Now, the new law that begins the Suncoast Extension also would add two other new roads. One would extend the Florida Turnpike to the Suncoast north of Orlando, and the third would be a new toll road from near Naples up through the middle of the state to close to Interstate 4 near Orlando. So together, these three would make for the largest road project here in the Sunshine State in half a century. A lot really isn't known, including exactly where the roads would go. How much will they cost? Who pays for them? We're talking transportation in Florida here on the Florida Roundup. 305-995-1800 at Florida Roundup on Twitter.
We're continuing the discussion right now as we welcome Steve Newborn of WUSF and Craig Pittman with the Tampa Bay Times, getting to everyone's calls in just a moment. Craig Pittman, let's begin with you. We heard the Senate president say these are corridors that go beyond roads. What about that concept, that these are necessary for more than just moving cars up and down the state?
Well, let's be clear. Senator Galvano got the idea for this legislation while meeting with the Florida Transportation Builders Association, which had donated to his political action committee. The folks who want this road the most are the people who would be being paid to build it, basically. And their concern is the roads and not all the ancillary stuff. The idea that you have to have these roads in order to extend all those other things, too, seems like an overreach. You can certainly extend sewer lines and power lines and so forth without having a highway attached to it. The whole point of this, as Senator Galvano has made clear, is not to fill an existing transportation need, but rather to create a new transportation need by funneling lots of new growth into these rural areas. People I've talked to in those areas, though, many of them don't want to be booming metropolises. They want to, they move to those areas or they grew up in those areas and they like the rural lifestyle. They like the slow pace of things. And as people used to say, they don't say it too much anymore, that, you know, there was a strong push in the 90s and 2000s of people saying, don't East Coast the West Coast. Don't make the Gulf side of Florida look like the Atlantic side of Florida, which is this urban sprawl nightmare of clogged highways.
There's still some rural areas between where I am in Miami and where Melissa is in Jacksonville, though, Craig. You know, one or two.
There's a few.
Not many. They still exist.
Yeah. In
Steve
spots.
Newborn, let me bring you into this conversation with WUSF. We heard some of those voices that you collected up near where the current end of the Suncoast Parkway is. To Craig's point, you know, there are some folks that that may not want this kind of road. But generally, what did the people tell you, and what is life like there where the Suncoast currently ends?
All right, so I took a trip from the Tampa, where it starts, north about 2 hours to Citrus County, the Citrus-Hernando County line. And for years, the parkway, the Suncoast Parkway, has dead-ended, I mean, in the middle of nowhere. There's just pine trees. I mean, I tried to get sound out there, and all I heard was crickets, basically. So I went to the first subdivision I saw, and, you know, I kind of went into this with a mindset, like Craig just said, that the people moved here to get away from it all, right? We don't want all that sprawl. We don't want to be like New York, like Allison said. But the one theme that I kept hearing from the people there is hurricane evacuation. They thought about Hurricane Irma and all the people who came up US 19 and created gridlock on this road that basically goes through the middle of nothing up there. So the mindset that I heard from them is this maybe not such a bad thing, this little keep these people going. You know, if they extend the parkway, they won't stop here. They'll keep going away from us. So maybe it's kind of a NIMBY thing. But it's funny how that colored the opinions of the people I talked to.
Interesting.
I have a question. The current thinking in the emergency management circles is don't evacuate hundreds of miles.
Right.
Instead, go really close. Go to a friend's house or a neighbor's house who's away from the water.
Rather than a long drive.
Yeah, important. Right, which will lead you into gridlock.
Important to point that out as well. And let's get to some phone calls from all over the state. Folks have been holding and waiting patiently to have their say. It's 305-995-1800 to join us from wherever you are around Florida this Friday as we talk about roads in the state. Let's begin with Pamela in St. Johns County. Hey, Pamela. Happy Friday to you.
Hey,
go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you. Well, I was listening to the discussion, and based on Florida's limited natural resources, particularly fresh water, you would think the state would instead focused on being a 21st century model for future generations. And I didn't hear anything mentioned about high-speed rail. Florida, it is so hard to get, say, from Miami to Tallahassee or Jacksonville to Tallahassee, mm-hmm. our capital. And if we had high-speed rail, it would make a lot of sense in Florida because we're such a long, difficult to travel across the state.
Thanks, Pamela. Craig Pittman and Steve Newborn, let me get both of your reactions to that. Of course, the previous governor, Rick Scott, infamously vetoed funds for high-speed rail in the state. He said it wouldn't get a return. It wouldn't make a profit. Other advocates of high-speed rail say it's a public service. It's not intended to necessarily make a profit. Although, of course, these toll roads will generate revenue if they become a reality. So let me ask both of you. The legislature is certainly not focusing on high-speed public transit with this big infrastructure push. Should they be? Craig?
I think there's a strong appetite among the public for high-speed rail, especially between the major population centers of Tampa, Orlando, and Miami, Fort Lauderdale, that area. But the legislature is almost allergic to mass transit and prefers to let it go to private industry. For instance, Brightline. Mm-hmm. They're all kind of mm-hmm. waiting with bated breath to
yeah,
say,
these
okay,
private
Brightline's
companies
gonna take care of the
problem. Are going to work on it, right.
Yeah, and so which kind of puts the lie to the idea that you can't make a profit from it.
That's true. Yeah, we'll have to see how that goes. Steve Newborn, it will be fascinating to watch a private company take flight with rail and see how the public embraces it.
Right. Well, like you just mentioned, we would have had a high-speed rail between Orlando and Tampa down the I-4 corridor now if Governor Scott didn't veto it because of his beef at the time with President Obama. So Brightline is now, or Virgin Atlantic is now, who's taken over Brightline, is looking to expand light rail from South Florida to Orlando and back down that same corridor. It's not going to happen for a few years. But one thing I wanted to bring up is that this would have nothing to do with hurricane evacuation. This would basically, it's kind of a loop around the state, so you'd kind of be shuttling people to different parts of the state. And as far as the future of transportation in Florida, to answer the lady's question, from what I've been hearing from talking to transportation managers is autonomous vehicles are going to be a total game changer mm-hmm. here. They say this is a disruptive period. We really don't want to spend billions of dollars on light rail because, these self-driving cars are going to be right around the corner, and eventually who knows what that's going to bring. So we're kind of in a wait-and-see period here as far as future modes of mass transit.
Here in South Florida, where we've debated public transit, mass transit for a good long time, and Mal Investment, a local political leader, has talked about not wanting to invest in what he called 19th century technology, a.k.a. roads, and rail. High-capacity rail, and instead has looked at bus rapid transit, for instance, and those kinds of things, and also has talked about autonomous vehicles. And we heard Senator Galvano talk about autonomous vehicles and perhaps having some dedicated lanes in the types of corridors they're thinking about building here in these three areas. Anne in Tallahassee has been patient on line 5. Anne, you're on the radio. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say that I don't believe that the hurricane evacuation reason is feasible, because the hurricane that we dealt with in North Florida, recently, Michael, we only had a few hours before, people really knew to get out, and people were stuck, like in Georgia and Alabama. And on top of that, the hurricane was so powerful that people were killed and there was damage in Georgia and Alabama. Mm-hmm. So you can't predict where these things are going to go and what's the best place to go. I think that the evacuation method of going just as far away from the coast as you can, but not going too far from your home, is probably the most reasonable. And the other thing I have to say is that the Jefferson County area here is very rural and very untouched, and it's one of those like last treasures of Florida. And if they're planning to build the highway through that, they're either going to be taking land from people, or they're going to be building it through natural areas.
Yeah. You bring up two really important points there, Anne, and I want to put that to our reporters here because they're some of the best folks in Florida to address that. Craig, on the land issue, while the specific routes here for these roads have not been identified, we do know generally who owns the land that are pretty high odds that the roads are going to have to go through, don't we?
Well, we know some of them. For instance, my colleague Lawrence Maurer and Langston Taylor did a lovely story talking about how one person who's going to obviously benefit from this is one of the richest people in Florida, who owns a lot of land up in North Florida, Mr. Petterby. So the whole process is sort of strange to me because normally, you know, the DOT would talk to local governments and ask, what are your needs? What sort of transportation plan should we put together for 5, 10, 15 years down the road? And this is like, okay, here's a road. You have to build it. Now figure out where to put it. And it's just, it's so unusual that actually, you know, they're talking about running the Suncoast up to Georgia. I called Georgia officials. They had no idea this was going on. They were like, you're doing what now?
Yeah.
So it's almost like the road's going to get to the Georgia line and just stop.
Right.
Yeah, then what happens? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Do you go from this big superhighway to a two-lane road? Well, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
There's a country song waiting to be written about just that place, I think.
Yeah.
But to Anne's second point on the environment, Steve, what are some of the local environmental issues or regional environmental circumstances that these areas where these roads may be built, what will they encounter?
Right. So the Suncoast Parkway is already undergoing a short extension through Citrus County to around Crystal River. Now, this bisects two wildlife management areas, the Chasawitska, which is on the coast, and the Citrus Wildlife Management Area, which is a little inland. And if you continue north of there, you look on a Google satellite map, and it's nothing but dark green. It's Suwannee River's up there. It's some of the last untouched areas in northern Florida. Now, what environmentalists are afraid of and why people like Frank Jackalone wants to declare war, quote-unquote, is that this is going to disrupt not only the water supply, but it's going to create sprawl, and it's going to interfere with the migration of wildlife. There's very few corridors for wildlife to migrate now. I've done a few stories on that with the Florida Wildlife Corridor Expedition. And they're afraid that this is going to be this high blockade of concrete that's going to prevent wildlife from migrating. So you're going to have these genetic pools that are kind of stuck in little areas that they can't migrate and interbreed with other areas as well.
So many. Let me just do a quick ID that you are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. We'll get back to you in Craig in just a moment.
Okay.
But first, let me get a few tweets on the air because you can tweet the show right now as we talk about road construction in Florida. Tweet us at Florida Roundup. Lots of listeners tweeting us. Let me read just a few of these. Here's one from Jay. Let's be real. The only thing that would really impact transit in Florida and America is high-speed rail connecting the cities and looped into light rail that links the suburbs and urban areas. More roads equals more urban sprawl. Here is another tweet from Brandon. This will be a disaster for the Nature Coast, which is the last part of Florida worth visiting. One more tweet. Are we looking 30 years out when these corridors might not even be accessible? If we don't address climate change with this planning, are these corridors still going to be viable? And so lots of questions being raised by some astute listeners out there. Let's get a few more of you on the air. It's 305-995-1800 to join the show. Tim in St. Lucie is on the line. Hi, Tim. Thanks for holding. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks so much. I say no to the multipurpose corridor. I say yes to people like Jay and your previous callers that are all about the high-speed rail. My wife is a Floridian native, and I've been here 50 years. We are so much on board with a high-speed rail. It hurts, but it's been put down so many times. I also say no to the Billionaire Boulevard.
You say no to it. Okay, thank you for that. Craig Pittman, you know, as you mentioned, or I think Steve might have mentioned a minute ago, high-speed rail is really popular with the public, not popular with the Florida legislature. It's one of those issues in Florida where the public is speaking loud and clear, seemingly, and the legislature does not seem to be taking heed.
That's not unusual.
You
may have noticed that the voters have voted for a number of referendums for constitutional amendments that the legislature then turned around and ignored, including reviving the very popular environmental land buying program, Florida Forever, and now more recently Amendment 4 for felon voting rights. The point I was going to make earlier is one of the key things that's going to be impacted in North Florida are the state springs. They were our first tourist attraction, and a number of them are part of state parks now, so the public owns them. They're sort of a window into the aquifer, and the state has been spending millions of dollars trying to revive them since Governor Bush's administration, and now running a highway through there. A lot of springs advocates are really worried about that this will undo all of the work they put into trying to save these springs. So that's something that I don't think has been talked about too much.
Right, and I'm glad you pointed that out. Before we go to break, Steve Newborn, this is something that we'll continue to take calls about, but it's really striking to see how vocal those that are opposed to this from all different corners of the state and for different reasons don't like this idea.
Right. The question is their voice going to be heard? I mean, like Craig was just saying, the legislature sometimes listens and more often does not to what the public has to say. So in this case, who is going to be louder, the voice of the people or the wallets of developers who might be who might benefit the most from the expansion of these highways? It's a good question.
And we'll continue hearing from your voices across Florida as we take your calls about new toll roads in the state. Give us a call right now. 305-995-1800. Back in a moment. It's the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
1, 2, 3.
That was Governor Rick Scott and a group of VIPs tossing the first shovels of dirt in 2015 for what is one of the biggest interstate reconstruction projects in the nation. It's called the I-4 Ultimate Improvement Project.
It's going to add lanes. It's going to speed up traffic. It's going to improve safety. It's going to do all the things to make sure this part of the state and our entire state continues to grow.
This is a massive project. It takes more than 21 miles of Interstate 4 right through downtown Orlando. Now, this is spokesman David Parks speaking with our sister station WMFE in Orlando 4 years ago as construction just got underway.
We're going to rebuild each and every inch of asphalt and concrete that's out there today, so everything you see will be completely rebuilt and made brand new and made much more efficient as you travel through Central Florida.
An ambitious project, an ambitious undertaking with lofty goals. Just listen to how Kevin Hoflinch with engineering firm HNTB described it back in 2015.
When it's all done, you're going to see a real showcase for how transportation can be in the future.
So are Orlando drivers getting a glimpse into the future of roads here in Florida? If so, what does that look like through the windshield? If you've navigated through the I-4 Ultimate, what that has been like over the last several years? 305-995-1800, 305-995-1800 at Florida Roundup on Twitter. Ariane Campo Flores is a reporter for the Wall Street Journal. You spent some good amount of time on the I-4 Ultimate project recently, Ariane. Describe what the goal of it is. What does it mean for the future of that 21-mile roadway?
Well, the goal was to relieve what had become very intense congestion over years. This was an area that had 200,000 people in the metro area back in the 60s when it was completed. The area now is 2.5 million people. The highway was built originally to handle 70,000 vehicles a day. They now get up to 200,000 a day in the most congested parts. And so that congestion was slowing commerce. It was creating, nightmare commutes. And so the idea was to widen it and deal with some of the, it has some aspects that are not safe, like some curves that are too sharp and some left lane exits that are dangerous. So the idea was to redo all of that, create these managed toll lanes, similar to what we have in Miami, where the tolls will fluctuate based on congestion. And the hope is that that is going to relieve that gridlock.
Ari, and I used to live in Orlando, now up here in Jacksonville. And anyone who has been the victim of I-4 regularly or even just passed through on their way to Disney World or somewhere else knows what a nightmare it is. And in fact, there is a toll road that goes around Orlando for people that want to find an alternate route and don't want the headache of, it's sort of been described as like a dull knife cutting through the city badly as you try to get through it. But let me ask you as a follow-up, these kinds of massive projects are always a nightmare for the commuters that have to deal with them. This one is so big in scope, it sort of reminds me, as I hear you describing it, of some other big projects that have bedeviled other big cities, like the Big Dig, for example, in Boston. That had huge cost overruns, went years past its deadline before it was finally finished. And that took commuters underground in Boston to try to relieve traffic congestion there. And so as we look ahead to the deadline for this, how realistic is it for people in Orlando to just assume that it's going to end up costing much more than budgeted and it's going to take much longer than projected?
Well, thankfully, things haven't gotten as bad as things got with the Big Dig in Boston yet. Mm-hmm. But there have been issues. There have been a lot of issues along the way. For instance, the area sits on very porous limestone, which is prone to sinkholes. Mm-hmm. That creates a lot of engineering difficulties in terms of driving pilings and creating the foundations for bridges. And so they had some failures of some of that drilling work, which has resulted in delays. And so there is a request by the consortium building this for about a 9-month extension and about $100 million more over the $2.3 billion that is budgeted for it. That is still a claim that is under review by the state and that is still in dispute. It's led to some level of contention between the state and the consortium. And there have been other issues as well. You know, hurricanes that blew through. There's been problems with flooding in some sections. It's tough work to do in a very dense urban environment.
This is an existing roadway that they are reconstructing. As the spokesman mentioned, every inch of asphalt will be brand new in this 21-mile stretch. But when an engineer describes it as a real showcase for how transportation can be in the future, what does that look like? When this is all said and done, when the I-4 Ultimate experience becomes a showcase for the trade, what does that mean? Wider roadways, bigger roadways, more shoulders, more right-hand exits, fewer left-hand exits? What does that look like, Ariane?
Well, so the way they've laid it out, it will involve two additional express lanes in each direction that are going to be these managed tolls that I described earlier. The hope is that will, you know, relieve some of the congestion. The other lanes are just going to be regular lanes. They're going to be, you know, redoing a lot of exits. They're redoing some of the interchanges. So, for instance, there's a really congested one that connects I-4 with 408 right in downtown. Mm-hmm. That is just a big choke point. And what they're doing is, instead of funneling all this traffic into this one narrow pathway, they're creating all of these stacked ramps to kind of distribute the traffic flow more efficiently. And they're smoothing out, as I mentioned, some of the curves, redoing some of the exits to relieve some of the backups that you get sometimes on the freeway. So, hopefully it'll work.
Mm-hmm. Drivers will be the final test of that in the years ahead. Let me remind folks that you are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio.
And let's bring back in Craig Pittman of the Tampa Bay Times and Steve Newborn of WUSF. Gentlemen, of course, you're over in the Tampa St. Pete area, which has had its own transportation challenges. Craig, let me ask you first, how do you see the I-4 Ultimate as compared to some of the transportation snarls and headaches in the Tampa St. Pete area and how those have been addressed?
Well, it's interesting that the solution that the transportation planners have come up with for all of these things is we're going to add extra tolled express lanes to these highways. They proposed that here in the Tampa Bay area for our I-275 between St. Pete and Tampa, and people went nuts. They did not want it. Mm-hmm. They protested it so long and so loud that finally the DOT backed off of the idea. The place where this has already been has been done is down in Miami, and correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is it's very unpopular down there as well.
Nobody's happy.
To be honest with you, Craig, I think there's no South Florida driver that's happy with transportation in South Florida.
Yeah.
Managed lanes, toll lanes or not.
Right.
But the toll lanes, lanes on I-95 here in South Florida, which are dynamically priced, so when they're really busy, they get higher in price. Ariane, I've seen double digits, $10, $11, $12.
Wow.
To go from downtown Miami up to the Broward County, Miami-Dade County line.
What a bargain.
Wow.
Steve Newborn, you know, it's amazing hearing Ariane talk about Orlando, Tom talk about Miami, you guys talk about Tampa, St. Pete up here. I'm in the other major metro in Florida, Jacksonville, which is also looking at bringing back toll lanes for the first time in many years. Because although we're less congested up here, congestion is growing here as well. And people are moving to this part of the state. The Census Bureau just announced Jacksonville is the seventh fastest growing city in America, outpacing even Miami in growth. And so as Florida cities grapple with growth, everybody wants to move here. Then they get frustrated at the congestion. They move here, you know, for opportunities and a warm climate. But too many other people, Steve, they have the same idea.
Right. You got to wonder, you know, when is the goose that laid the golden egg going to, when are we going to choke, right?
Yeah.
So you get to the point where so many people want to come here, but then is it too much? I mean, are we killing the whole reason that we came here? I recently did a story looking at a report by 1,000 Friends of Florida. They did a study of what Florida is going to look like in 2060. And the population here is supposed to go to 33 million. I mean, if you can imagine that, it's almost California style, right? And just here in Central Florida alone, it would go to 16 million. So where are we going to put these people?
Yeah.
And how are we going to get around?
How are we going to fit them all in?
Ariane, right, ask you, I mean, you write for the Wall Street Journal, you're looking at things through the viewpoint of the market. Is that going to be the frame in which to judge not only whether the relative success or failure of the I-4 Ultimate reconstruction, but any future kind of big road project? In other words, does it bring the economic vitality to an area, as we heard Senator Galvano say, was one of the justifications for these three new roadways that they want to build?
Well, I mean, what the issue with I-4 is that you did see an enormous amount of development that happened around that whole corridor. You know, the issue is that something that you want to encourage, and how do you go about doing that? I mean, I think that's a question. What I-4 and the Orlando area is facing now is just that growth has become such that it is now choking the economic development of the area.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ariane Campo Flores, reporter for the Wall Street Journal. Great to have you on the program. Thanks for sharing your reporting with us.
Thanks. Good to be
Craig
here.
Craig Pittman, always nice to have your voice from the Tampa Bay Times. Thanks for joining us from your newsroom.
Thanks for inviting me.
And Steve Newborn with our sister station in Tampa and the news department at WUSF. Thanks for sharing all your reporting with us as well, Steve. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Thanks to all of you, and thanks to all of our callers and everyone who tweeted the show. That is our show for today. The Florida Roundup is produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Alex Gonzalez and Heather Schatz are producers.
Jason Zabka is the WLRN Director of Radio Programming, also our technical director today. The Director of Radio Operations is Peter Meritz. Engineering help today from Doug Peterson. Thanks, Doug. Our theme music provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. Have a great weekend. We'll be right back here again next Friday at noon.